Hi, this is Rachel McElroy.
Hi, this is Griffin McElroy.
And this is wonderful.
Hey, you made it on back home to us. You brought it on home. We left the light on for you. The podcast light outside of our podcast hotel. No bugs here, except for the hug bugs. And that's what I call my arms. The long hug bugs extending off my torso. They're 10 wriggling antennae looking for meat.
I gotta tell you.
Yeah.
Sitting in a room with the great improviser, Griffin McElroy, is such an honor every week.
These 10 wriggling antennae are just looking for flesh that they can wrap themselves around for a big old embrace.
It sounds like he wrote this out before we started, but
he didn't. I'm reading it off my computer right now. So welcome to our podcast hotel, and we don't change the sheets. We expect you to do that yourself, you fucking nasty. Nasty. You got to change those damn sheets yourself. What are you doing not changing the sheets? It's a no-service hotel.
Based on a conversation we had earlier, Griffin McElroy doesn't change the sheets very often either.
That I told you that in private. It was a long time ago, but it was college, and it was all of it. So this is going to be sort of we're doing something different this time. I think I'm going to do my two things, and then you have one big thing.
One super
that
size.
That's going to be at the end of the episode. So do you want me to just go ahead and get started? Because also our time has been slipping a little bit. We said when we started, this is going to be a half hour to 45 minute podcast. We're creeping towards that hour mark, and I've seen that creep happen a lot. And I don't know, I'd like to keep it tight if we can, you know? Tight, condensed, efficient. It's starting to reach like Marvel movie proportions. And the shit like this, the talking about the hug arm bugs and just sort of vamping about the length of the show, it's actually not helping.
Yeah, see, this is the thing. I don't think we can blame me on this one.
Yeah, so my first thing is travel activities. Now, this is sort of the most abstract I think I've maybe gotten.
Yes.
I am talking about you're sitting in the passenger seat of a car or a bus or the passenger seat of a train, which is most of the seats on the train. There's really only the one non-passenger seat or a plane, right? You're sitting in that seat. What are you going to do? I love that.
Really?
I love that. And I recognize that is strange. Now I should put in a caveat. I don't necessarily love air travel. Specifically, train travel fucking owns bones. I would give anything to be able to travel by train if only Texas wasn't the size of a small planet and, you know, was more, had more shit that you could get to by train. I'm not talking about that, right? Because on an airplane, it's so expensive and inconvenient and getting through security is so stressful. And then they shut the doors and instantly my sinuses like grow 3 sizes and make me very sick. And you know, you sit next to somebody and maybe they don't respect the elbow.
Let's talk about what we like though. What do you like?
I'm not talking about the logistics of it. I'm talking about, I love planning out what I'm going to be doing on a plane or in the passenger side of a car or while riding on it, like a long, long train thing, because this is something I think about a lot because I travel a lot these days for the podcast and doing live shows and stuff like
that. It should
be
mentioned.
Now, with the baby, you really only have the one activity. You really only have the one activity when you are traveling with the baby. And that activity is, please.
Can I make a confession before we continue? I have not read a book since Henry was born.
Yes.
And that's largely because if I have time in which Henry's occupied or asleep, I typically also want to be asleep.
Right. I've read one, and it was while I was traveling, because I planned on it.
I used to really enjoy getting a book for travel.
Yeah.
Just like knowing this was going to be my travel book.
And that's exactly what I'm talking about. Yeah. There are things, and it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but when you think about travel activities, you think of it as being this different suite of opportunities available to you that you wouldn't normally, like, jump after on a normal non-travel day, even though I don't think that's true. Like, I, on a non-travel day, if I have free time, I might, you know, get on my phone and play like a mobile game, or get on my Switch and play a game on that, or listen to a podcast, or listen to music, or read a book or something. That's all stuff I can do at home or while I'm traveling. Like, the lines have kind of blurred, especially with like technology becoming what it is, where now you can watch whatever movie that you want on a plane, on your tablet or whatever. But there's something about the psychology of knowing that you're going to be sitting in a chair for a few hours And so you try to find things to occupy those hours. And there's something about thinking about planning a period of your day like that, that I think is really exciting for me. Like I get really into it. Like a week in advance, I think like, okay, you know, I've got 5 hours of flying that day, 5 hours home, so I can download 10 hours of podcasts. There's a new game that just came out on the 3DS I haven't played yet. I'm going to pick that up. And Justin's been telling me about this mobile game for a while, so I'll grab that too. And I'm going to read this book that I've owned for a long time, and maybe I'll crack into that finally. Like, I don't know. I love thinking about that. Like, I really do think it's a very, very enjoyable pastime. And then
I think it's interesting knowing you personally, because I think part of what I think you might like about it is that typically when you are home, you are thinking of other things that you should be doing. Whereas when you're on a plane, like your options are limited. And so you right. can do these things kind of guilt free.
Yeah, that's definitely part of it. But I really do think like the biggest thing is just this artificial barrier that I've built between things I can do while I'm traveling and things I can do while I'm at home. Because yeah. that barrier is not really there. It's the same things, essentially. And this has been since I was like a little kid, really since like the advent of the Game Boy, when I would just be like, oh, yeah, yeah, we're driving. Because we used to take long ass car trips. Like we'd go to, you know, the Carolinas, and that's, you know, 8-9 hours. Or we'd go down to Florida. That's like a whole day of driving. And I would just need like, I would need a lot of stuff. I would need some comics and I would need a game or two. And then, you know, dad and mom and dad would get a book on tape that we could listen to in the car. Like there's something about it. And don't even get me started about snacks. Cause there are entire snacks industries that are based on you're going to eat this in your fucking car and nowhere else. What's up combos? Oh. What was the last time you cracked into a bag of like at home? Like get out the big share size bag of combos. That doesn't exist. You can get 30 combos in a small bag. You'll eat it while you're driving and you won't know why.
You won't know why
you're eating these little flavor barrels.
That for me is Chex Mix.
Chex Mix, maybe at some like parties, like an office holiday party, like they'll have some Chex Mix or some puppy chow laid out, right? But like normally, yeah, you don't fuck with Chex Mix unless you're on the road. And then you're always, always, never not fucking with Chex Mix.
Swedish Fish is another one.
Swedish Fish. And Mike and Ike's for me, like, I can't explain why I eat Mike and Ike's at all, except that when I get up in the sky, I feel the call of Mike and the call of Ike, and I answer it every time. I just think it's like, I don't know, I genuinely enjoy thinking about like stuff in my backpack, my Swiss gear, full of shit. Like I'll get my Kindle in there, my iPad, I'll get my 3DS, my Switch, just a bunch of stuff.
No, I've seen you like assemble your like bug out bag of travel gear.
And it's not a very good bug out bag. I feel like Bear Grylls would be kind of PO'd if you saw what I was bringing to the table.
It's all very electricity dependent.
And then like sometimes we went to Seattle for PodCon, this past weekend, and, I was on those nice Delta Airbuses that have the screens on the back of the seats with like a bunch of free movies on it. And I watched like Dunkirk.
How great would that be traveling with Henry to just have a screen built in?
Oh. Yeah. We've traveled with Henry a couple of times, but we have not had the fortune to have the screen. But I've watched I've traveled a lot, right, since Henry's been born, and you and I don't get a lot of opportunities to go to the movies. And so, like, I watched a bunch of movies on airplane screens.
See, now you're just making me jealous.
Well, no, I mean, these are now movies, like, Rogue One. Like, there was a Star Wars movie that was out that I hadn't seen, which was Buck Wild, but then I finally got to see it because of this airplane. I also just love, like, sometimes I love a good, like, road trip. I fucking love a good road trip. Back in the day, like I used to take them all the time.
Yeah.
Especially when I was kind of like between cities after I'd graduated from college and knew I was going to be moving away from Cincinnati. I was like trying to find a new place to go. So I just took this long road trip up to Boston where I drove and stopped in a bunch of cities and like tried them out for a little bit. And I was like the best, man. Getting a couple CDs burnt. I unearthed a couple of my, I don't know how I found them, but a couple of like very old, CDs from my old radio show, like today. I was listening to them. Man, I used to just burn a bunch of them and just, you know, drive to some other city. It was so great.
I wish those CDs came with your DJ commentary in between the tracks, because I would go for that.
Well, if you want, I can record all of that right now, and we can put it on this podcast, and then people can layer it over the CD. So I'll just like, here, let me just knock it out real quick. Yeah, it was pretty sad. End of commentary. Put that before each track and you're ready to go. Or let me add something else. Yeah, I was really inexplicably into the soundtrack to Lost in Space, the remake with Matt LeBlanc.
And so, the movie, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, that's I also enjoyed the film. Please do not at me on that. Travel activities. I feel like you balked at travel activities, but you get it, right?
I get it. I will say there's part of it for me where as soon as I get on there and I realize I have to be there, I start to get real antsy. It's kind of the same way I feel like when the cat lays on top of me and I instantly start thinking, how long can I do this before I lose my mind? And I kind of feel that way on a plane too, like on our international flights.
That's the only time when I actually get, yeah.
Like an hour and a half in, I start thinking like, I got so much ahead of me. How am I going to do this?
Well, that's why you
got
to have more travel activities so you'd never have that.
And starts to feel really small.
Oh, you can't do that.
And I can't like sleep on a plane.
Just look at Dunkirk, baby. Just look right into, look to stare deep into Dunkirk. There's like no dialogue in that fucking movie, basically at all.
I don't know anything
Sometimes
about
Kenneth
it.
Branagh, I knew nothing about it either until I watched it, except that it was the, you know, Inception Man. And there's like just no dialogue, just a lot of shooting, a lot of people getting shooted.
Yeah.
Very scary.
Is there like a guy named Dunkirk?
There's a guy named Mark Dunkirk. And
is he a realtor?
He's a realtor. He's a realtor on that beach in Dunkirk. And he's like, we got to get all these British and French soldiers off my beach so I can sell my house.
There's a place called Dunkirk?
Yeah. But it's fine.
Okay.
I want to do my second thing real quick.
Okay.
And then again, we're going to get to Rachel's super block after the ad block, probably. My second thing is having a nice, sharp kitchen knife.
Ooh.
The feeling of a nice, sharp kitchen knife is like, if you're looking for ways to like step up your kitchen game, which is not like a thing that has been a major consideration in my life until very recently, having a nice, sharp kitchen knife. Yeah. I remember the first time I sharpened a kitchen knife and I cut something with it and I was like, oh, this is why it takes me fucking 3 hours to like make anything.
Yeah.
Is because I didn't have a nice sharp kitchen knife. And it's not just faster. It's way, way safer. And I learned this in cooking class. I took a cooking class in high school. That was like one of the electives we could take was cooking. But like every high school cooking class, it was mostly nachos. but yeah, we learned that a dull knife is like way, way more dangerous than a sharp knife is.
Oh, I believe it.
Because with a dull knife, then you can slip or miss the mark in some way, and that's when you're gonna cut yourself. Which is what happened to me over Thanksgiving. Horrible injury. Horrible sweet potato based injury. These sweet potatoes, these yams were motherfuckers. They were some real stiff customers. Let me tell you what. lot of hard meat in there. So yeah, a sharp knife though, you don't have that problem. It just goes right through it. So. They recommend, and by they, I mean some website I found, to use a honing rod, which is what we have.
Yeah.
That's part of most standard knife blocks. It's just like a big metal rod, the like long end of which is kind of textured in a way that you drag your knife across it. I forget what the exact angle you're supposed to do. And it'll make it a little bit sharper, right? And that's like your go-to technique for sharpening the knife. And if you're like a professional chef, you'll probably do it every day. For most people, probably once or maybe even twice a week if you go at it a lot. But then I didn't really respect this part of the knife sharpening game, but it makes sense because I see ads for stuff like this in Austin all the time. You're supposed to go to like somebody with a whetstone after like a year or so and get
it
sharpened.
They have those at the farmer's market.
I've always wondered, like, why the fuck would you do this? Why not just use the honing rod at home? Why would you like, why do you have to come in? It's because the honing rod can only get your knife's edge sharp to a certain, like a certain degree. And then at a certain point, like you cannot get that edge any sharper. You cannot refine that edge anymore. So you have to go to a whetstone where they literally grind the edge away until it reveals a new edge that then can be honed. I didn't know this, but there's I'm very like excited. And also I'm going to take our fucking knives to the farmer's market with me next time and get those things sharpened.
There's a good analogy there, right?
For what? The whetstone is Jesus, and the honing rod is drugs. No. And you use the honing rod, and you think, like, I've got it all figured out. But eventually, the drugs aren't going to get you any sharper. You got to go to the Jesus whetstone. He'll help you find a new edge, a straight edge. It's a perfect analogy.
Yeah, no, that's better than I guess what I was thinking of.
Now, what were you thinking of? Now I want to know.
Oh, gosh. I don't know. I guess just when you make these small changes, that's just you using your honing rod. Mm. But when you make a significant change in your life, that's you crafting a new edge.
I mean, that one works too. Mine had the straight edge literally in it.
And
that
was nice.
So it's just like, I enjoy cooking a lot. Like I genuinely do. And I enjoy like getting that mise en place shit, like ready to go. A lot of like the recipes that we use just require you to like, okay, cut this. Okay, now cook it all together. And I fucking love that. And like step one in that for me always is getting the knife sharp and cleaning off the cutting board, because that's like the zone. And it's so like, I don't know. It's just so much more fun to cook when you know that like your tools are like ready for it. And that you can, you're not going to have to be like cleaning shit up as you go and, you know, fumbling with this or that. Like, it's just nice to like have this nice, clean, sharp knife next to the clean cutting board and then getting going from there. I really enjoy it. Also watching like videos of super sharp kitchen knives cutting through shit, like the Ginsu era, like all those commercials, like I fucking get it now. I don't think I appreciated it when I was younger watching a knife cut through like a cowboy boot or whatever. But now, like, watching a knife stab perfectly through a piece of paper without the paper moving, that is my shit, dog.
Yeah,
watching a tomato just get slowly, like, skinned, like, that rules.
I don't know why that's so satisfying, but it very much is.
It very much is. Because how did it even get that sharp? How sharp can you get a knife? Can you cut a hole in the fabric of space-time? Because some of these knives, man, I'm telling you, stab all the way through a phone book with, like, one like little bit of pressure.
Could you give yourself a haircut
with probably a kitchen knife? Like with some fucking Hattori Hanzo steel, like definitely. I mean, that's another thing, like when you are like getting your knife really sharp and then it cuts through things very easily, there is like a weird like, oh, I feel like a medieval knight or like a medieval blacksmith at the very least. Although apparently gotta get a whetstone. Apparently that's not just some D&D shit. Like, you got to use those on your knives so you can cut through tomatoes super good. I'm going to buy a tomato at the farmer's market, bring my knife, and just be like, no, keep going.
Keep going.
I want you to fuck that tomato up.
I want a nub. I want a nub and a handle.
How about we steal us some money? Let's steal us some money. Now, this is an interesting development.
Ooh, okay.
Maybe the ad break could be like a heist that we're planning. And then it can be like, and it's like an alarm going off at the bank.
I like that a lot, but we can never do it again. See, this is the problem we created for ourselves, is that we do a new stinger, or at least a new version of the stinger every week.
You're right. So pearls before swine is not what that means.
In that moment, I really enjoyed it, but you can never do it again.
Shoot beans.
I know.
You want to read that first Jumbotron?
Yes. This message is for Alexander, Anton, Ranka, Celeste, Alina, Anea, Philip, Ida, Lovisa, Malin, and Tove.
Whoa.
It is from Caroline Crushbone.
Okay.
Hey, MBMBOJS, which is, she says in parentheses, Swedish Mabimbambinos. Mabim bam. That's how you say it, right?
Yeah, babe. And thanks for supporting my art.
Our group chat is amazing, and I totally love the way that we have found each other over our love for Mackle content. I could think of no better way to let you know how much I like you guys than to have Rachel and Griffin do so in Wonderful, as you guys truly are just that. P.S. Hoping for some D&D sessions soon.
How delightful and how nice. Is this an international sort of band of you know, rabble-rousers and...
Seems like it.
Ne'er-do-wells?
Well, she did say Swedish.
Yeah,
so
I love
that
it.
That might be exciting for us to know we have Swedish listeners.
I know we have sweet-ish listeners. I mean, they're a little bit sweet, but they're also a little bit nasty, too.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Here's a message, and it's for Alphonse, and it's from Jamie, who says, since we're bad at dates, we'll call whenever this airs right. So, happy 10-year anniversary to my best friend. I love you to infinity and beyond, and this decade has been the best one of my life. From hours on the couch playing Bubble Bobble, fuck yeah. To the birth of our cool babies, Flynn and Potter, you're better than a robot and or soul grafted to a suit of armor. A lot of people don't recognize, it's a very, very good message, and I love all of it. But a lot of people don't recognize that a lot of these robots are just souls grafted into, you know, big shells. And it's dangerous, and it's not right. Let them go to heaven already. You know, that Osimo one that I think Toyota makes, and he's just this little one, and he just kind of like stumbles around. Or the Boston one, that the big dog, it's just like a big dog and it can run on ice and stuff.
You were saying words right now, and I recognize that they are words.
Have you not seen the big dog?
No.
Ooh, we're gonna watch a big dog video. This is important. We have to do it right now.
What does it have to do with Boston?
Boston Dynamics makes this big dog. The big dog. Watch him. Watch what he does to big dog. You see? Watching. Fucking kicks big dog. Big dog don't fall over.
Okay, when you said big dog, I thought I was going to see a robot that looked like a cuddly dog.
No, this robot looks like a big,
I'm a little disappointed, to be honest.
I think big dog looks really cuddly. And I wish these men would stop fucking kicking it, because there's a dog's soul in there.
Yeah, I don't like this, Griffin. It's creepy looking.
It looks it's big dog.
It looks like a giant insect.
It's not a giant insect. It's a big dog, and it's my best one, friend.
if it were a little dog, I think I'd like it.
That's hateful against big dog. He didn't decide to be that big.
A little guy.
If they could make him little, then the computer parts aren't sophisticated enough. I had to put him in a big dog. Babe, you gotta stop talking crap about big dog, okay?
It's very impressive.
It's not just impressive, it's great. Watch Big Dog go.
Not cute at all. Oh, gosh, no.
They just keep kicking the dang dog, don't they? But this big dog won't fall over. This big dog's going to kill both of these men one day.
Why did we start talking about this?
I think because I just really wanted to talk about Big Dog. Also, they named it Big Dog. And that's great, too.
Hey, Helen Hong.
Yes, J. Keith Van Stratton?
What's the difference between a layover and a stopover?
I have no idea. What's the difference between optimal and optimum?
I have no idea. Well, what's the difference between an actual conversation and a promo for our new show on Maximum Fun, Go Fact Yourself?
Nobody has any idea.
Go Fact Yourself, the game show with celebrity contestants, super smart experts, and answers to questions you've never even asked.
Listen twice a month on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. And be in the audience for our tapings of Go Fact Yourself in downtown L.A. It's free. Go to GoFactYourPod.com for more info.
We're having a very realistic conversation.
Yes, we are.
So, Rachel, what are we talking about in the back half of this episode of Wonderful?
My wonderful item for this week is Hanukkah.
Neither of us are capable of making that fucking noise. Hanukkah starts tonight, right?
Yep.
First crazy night.
Well, as we're recording. When this airs,
we'll be on this, second morning or whatever. Do you do anything in the mornings on Hanukkah?
Nope.
Just a nighttime.
It's a sundown activity.
I like that.
Yeah.
Because you can have the whole rest of your day to do whatever. Can I celebrate Hanukkah in the mornings?
No.
Oh, okay. What if I really want to? Aw.
So, caveat, just to start off the episode, I had to do more research on this than I probably should have had to do, considering I have celebrated Hanukkah my entire life.
Yes. Correct me if I am wrong. And I should mention that I am not of the Jewish faith and did not celebrate Hanukkah until you and I got together. And now I also think it is absolutely wonderful, and I'm excited to do it, with the two of us and our son. But I don't know, I also do not know a ton about it. But from what I understand, it is not like the highest, holiest day. It is what's a fun holiday? Like, what can we do with a fun holiday? And that is kind of Hanukkah. Obviously, there's an origin story there, but it is not what are the big ones? Yom Kippur and
Rosh Hashanah.
Rosh Hashanah.
Passover is another big one.
Yeah, like a huge one.
Yeah.
Hanukkah is more just like a part, like a fun time, like Purim, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's literally a celebration.
Right.
So I am always confused as to when Hanukkah is because it changes every year. And I never really understood why. But it always kind of falls around Christmas, which is why it gets paired up.
Right, sure.
With Christmas. So the Jewish calendar is primarily based on the lunar cycle. And the first day of Hanukkah can fall anywhere between November 28th and December 26th.
So kicks off on the 12th. We're pretty much right in the middle here.
Mm-hmm.
Damn, the 28th, dude. We are staring down the barrel of a year where we have Henry's birthday, Thanksgiving, and Hanukkah all in like the same week.
Yeah, gosh, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, bud.
Oh, that's terrifying. So Hanukkah is the 8-day festival of lights, and the word Hanukkah means dedication.
I did not know that.
I didn't either. So you'll see Hanukkah spelled a bunch of different ways.
I like the one with the C at the beginning.
See, that one always makes me uncomfortable because here's the thing. So the reason the translation is so inconsistent is that the ch sound is a guttural, throaty sound like the CH in Bach.
Right, yeah.
Which does not have an English equivalent, which is why you'll often see H. But I always get insecure.
Wow, yeah, because I definitely feel insecure. Like, I feel like that would be like kind
of
appropriate.
I've never been good at the throaty sound.
It wasn't great.
I get nervous whenever
It just sounds like you're putting like a weird amount of emphasis on the Hanukkah.
Like chutzpah?
Yeah. But you can't like roll your C's.
So Hanukkah, just brief history. In the second,
the Maccababees were being persecuted by Angelica.
That's very sweet.
It's also disrespectful in a major way.
Rugrats. Yeah. No, honestly, I don't think so. I personally think that more exposure needs to happen for this holiday, and
yeah,
I'll take it in most places I can get it.
Yes, it's definitely limited. Yeah. I don't think you could argue that it's not.
In second century BCE, the Holy Land was ruled by the Greeks, who tried to force the people of Israel to accept Greek culture and beliefs. And a small band of faithful Jews, led by Judah the Maccabee, defeated one of the mightiest armies on earth, drove the Greeks from the land, and reclaimed the Holy Temple in Jerusalem and rededicated it to the service of God. Here's something I didn't know about Maccabee.
Yeah.
Turns out there's a lot of opportunity here for acronyms. Because Maccabee is a word composed of the initial letters of the four Hebrew words, Mi Kamoka Ba'alem Hashem, who is like you, O God. So that's M.
Wait, so his name is literally like a truncation of this phrase?
Yeah, well, the Maccabees came from a word composed of the initial letters.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I know. I didn't know that.
So what was the 8 candles, though? Explain that.
Oh, okay. So
you kind of set up like there's a dude who got a big army. And then in my head, I'm thinking like, fuck yeah, dude, sounds like 300 really into this shit.
So they just reclaimed the temple.
Yeah. Kicks him down a big pit.
When they sought to light
this is Hanukkah. And he kicks him. Do you think they knew it was Hanukkah back then? Do you think when Christ was born, they were just like, yo, it's Christmas. What?
And then they started counting down the shopping days to the next one.
Yeah. Everybody in the world felt so guilty instantly because they had forgotten.
Okay, so they sought to light the temple's menorah, and they found only a single pot of oil. Miraculously, they lit the menorah, and the one-day supply of oil lasted for 8 days.
Dope.
Yeah.
It's dope. It is also strange that that is like the focal point. I don't know.
Well, you know what I found? This might not be true. So I went to this website called Shabbat.org, and it said that the initial story of Hanukkah was just about triumphing over the Greeks.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
And then it was only later that rabbis got together and came up with this kind of celebration of the oil.
That's okay. That's exactly what I'm talking
about. That's 100% true, but I think it's interesting to kind of turn it into like a more like, and this is why we do this thing we do.
Yeah, sure. I get the symbolism and everything, but it's when I learned about Hanukkah when I was younger from, from afar until I watched that fucking Rugrats episode, No Joke, which taught me the actual meaning of Hanukkah. I just thought it was there were these folks who lit a lamp and it lasted like a wicked long time.
Yeah.
And so we celebrate that great lamp when there's like a lot more to it than that.
Yeah. Here's another thing I didn't know. So something is only technically a menorah if all of the candles are at the same level. If there is a shamash, which is the attendant candle that you use to light the other ones, then it's something called a Hanukkah.
Wait. First of all, that's the name for the best, like, Kia car salesman promotion. Like, come on down for 8 nights of great sales down at Hanukkah.
So let me...
That was a very delayed reaction. So wait, if it's the eight candles, but with the one with the shamash, and the shamash is not on the same level as the other candles, it's not a menorah?
So a Hanukkah is a type of candelabra with 9 candle holders. 8 are in a line, and the 9th candle is out of place, either at a different height or position.
And that's not a menorah.
The menorah is a more of a symbolic object that contains 7 branches of candle holders and does not have a shamash out of place.
That's only 7 candles.
I know. It's interesting, right? I didn't know that. In my house, we called it the helper candle.
I like that, too. That's so cute. What were your Hanukkah? What did you do for Hanukkah when you were younger? Tell me everything right now.
Okay.
Did your grandma get... go like buck wild?
Oh my gosh. So here's my favorite grandma story. My dad's side of the family is Jewish, and they are, I would say, a faithful people, but not very active in any kind of like temple or formal practice. But growing up in like a suburban area of St. Louis, which does have a decent Jewish population, but not in the areas that we were. My dad and my grandma became kind of the representatives for a lot of their friends and coworkers for the Jewish faith. And so the best thing about my grandma is she would tell this story all the time where she'd be like, yeah, people are always asking me questions about Hanukkah and about Jewish tradition and expecting me to be this expert. And she's like, you know, and so I tell them what I know. And what I don't know, I make up. She's like, they don't know any different. which is true. It's always been intimidating for me because I've always been in a group of people typically where Jewish people are the minority.
Right.
And so when you mention that is part of your background, people will ask you all these questions.
Yeah, sure.
And, you know, like when I meet somebody that's Christian, I don't ask them a lot of questions about Christmas because I've just kind of grown up with it. But Hanukkah isn't something that a lot of people grow up with,
at least
in most areas of the country. So I had to do a lot of research and I still found it very delightful.
Yeah, for sure. So like what?
So we would do a menorah every night, or I guess a Hanukkah.
I feel like I've been lied to not my entire life, but at least the last like 5 years. It's not a, can we just call it a menorah?
Yes.
Sounds great. Okay.
Yes. And I would say what I thought was the Hebrew prayer.
Uh-oh.
Which in my research, I was pretty close. But it was one of those things that was taught to me when I was very young by my dad. And, you know,
I've seen the two of you deliver the prayer at the same time. And it starts out strong with the, you know, Baruch Atah, and then it's, not that fast. You can make it about like, you know, 6 or 7 words in, and then you both kind of turn mumblecore on me.
It was one of those things that when I learned it, you know, I was probably really little, and so it was probably kind of charming if I was a little off. And then it just kind of continued. And now I don't know that anybody really knows it especially well in my family. And so we all just kind of say like, yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah.
Okay. So here it is.
Oh, wait. Are you sure you want to do, you are going to be opening yourself up to like,
well, so I found a phonetic.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. I found a phonetic reading of it. And I'm just enough confident that it was close to what I was doing. Okay. So Baruch atah Adonai. Eloheinu melech haolam, asher kedeshanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu lahadlik ner shel Hanukkah.
That was good.
Although shall I don't see on here, but we always used to say that. And it means, blessed are you, Lord our God, King of the universe, who has sanctified us with his commandments and commanded us to kindle the Hanukkah light.
I love how like interstellar, like Hebrew prayers are, because almost all of them use, I don't know what the word is, but King of the universe sounds so like, it's so like, I don't know. It's so like cosmically reverent in a way that I think is like fascinating.
Well, and that's one thing that I've always kind of liked about the Jewish tradition is there's this sense of that you are always seeking a greater understanding. Like there is a lot still to be discovered and you can only discover it through this kind of academic pursuit of the truth. And so there's a lot of like scholarly elements to it, and there's a lot of kind of, yeah, like you said, this kind of cosmic sense of like there's so much bigger out there that we are still exploring. So Hanukkah food.
Oh, here we go. Here we go. Here
we
go.
Here we go. Thing I never realized, and it's so obvious now that I say it. Since the miracle involved oil, it is customary to eat foods fried in oil.
Come on.
I knew what the foods were. Like I knew potato latkes.
Right.
I recently learned about the donuts, which is like another thing, like jelly donuts. But I never really made the connection of like
oil.
Why Hanukkah? Oil.
This was one part where like I kind of knew about Hanukkah. I obviously did not, I did not celebrate it before you and I got together. I don't know that I'd ever eaten a latke until we did Hanukkah and started doing Passover and stuff together.
Yeah, so good though.
It's
right?
So freaking good.
Yeah.
There is a, I'm going to brief tangent. There was a DreamWorks movie, I believe, called Home with Jim Parsons from Big Bang Theory, I think is the voice of this like purple alien guy. I did not see the movie. But there is a cartoon series that is like a animated, like 2D, I forget, I don't know what the right word, 2D cartoon.
Yeah, I think just came out this year, right, on Netflix?
I think so. And we watched it as part of our sort of like getting into kids shows.
It says it's a Christmas movie, I think.
There's a whole TV show. There's a whole TV show. And the TV show, like, we've watched a lot of, and I have enjoyed it. And then they did this holiday special, and the holiday special includes a performance by actual Kelly Clarkson, and then a incredible cameo, not even cameo, like a whole segment where Ben Schwartz from Parks and Recreation shows up, the guy who plays Jean Ralphio, shows up and does a whole song about latkes. And it is
really good.
Fucking incredible. And then him and Kelly Clarkson get back together at the end to sing like this whole duet. It's like a really good Christmas special. It's a good holiday special.
Yeah.
That I really enjoyed. Latkes, they fucking rule.
They're so good. Sour cream, applesauce.
Yes. All of it.
Delicious. So for those of you that don't know, latkes are like little potato pancakes that you fry in oil. And I mean, when I say potato pancake, that's basically what it is. You're holding it together with egg and flour.
Yeah.
And you're frying.
There's some onion in there sometimes too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's very good.
It is real good. What else do you like about Hanukkah? I mean, you get 8 presents, right? You gotta love those presents.
This is interesting too. And this is very recent and not true for everybody. But as you mentioned earlier, Hanukkah wasn't like a big, big celebration. I mean, it was a celebration, but it wasn't like Christmas level gift giving.
Right, sure.
And my dad and grandma always used to talk about that a lot too, of just, you know, the presents that you got night to night were not supposed to be giant Christmassy presents. A lot of it was like money.
Yeah.
Or gelt, like the chocolate coins that they give out for Hanukkah. It's only recently, as Hanukkah and Christmas have been kind of butting up against each other, that presents have become like a more significant part of Hanukkah.
Why do you think that is? Just like, because if you're like a little Jewish child and you watch your...
Yeah, I was reading this article on Slate about kind of ways to make it so that your experience, especially if you're in a household like I was, where there are the two holidays are both celebrated, where they're competing, like how you keep them separate. And just kind of the challenges associated with trying not to have them battle it out.
Yeah, because that starts to get, that kind of gets a little crass. Like, well, not a little, like extremely crass very, very quickly.
Yeah.
I don't think of them as, and you know, I didn't celebrate it until I was an adult. When I was a little kid and like obsessed with getting presents, like I think I would be probably in that mindset a little bit more.
Yeah, I think that Christmas has become such a huge thing.
Yeah.
In that, like, the shopping season for Christmas starts often now.
The day after Halloween.
Yeah. And being a child and seeing that and hearing your friends talk about and seeing the commercials and seeing all the store displays and everything, there becomes this kind of tension of, like, I am left out of not just a holiday, but several months out of the year.
Right, sure. Which I think a lot of people these days, maybe as adults, they are stoked to not have to be party to, you know, holiday or specifically in this case, Christmas, like, mm-hmm. Stuff for
and
2 months.
I have met a lot of Jewish people who have always celebrated Christmas.
Right, sure.
Because it's a seasonal thing for them. It's just like part of the winter time and celebrating.
Yeah. And I mean, there is definitely a, what's the word I was, not sectional. What's the, secular?
There you go. Sectional.
For this Christmas, I got you a new sectional from Pottery Barn. It's great. This
it's
folds
eight,
down.
Eight piece sectional.
It's an 8-piece sectional.
Every
you're
night.
Get one piece a night. I think a lot of people just like treat it like a secular holiday, like mm-hmm. straight up. Like, oh, yeah. I really like It's a Wonderful Life and, yeah. you know, and that's how I get down on
yeah.
it.
Yeah. So I always celebrated both, which was tremendously fortunate for me. And I had a lot of jealous friends because of that.
Well, at least you weren't also an only child. So you were essentially just siphoning off the tip of this enormous gift funnel.
Presents.
Fucking Violet Beauregard.
Any just presents like, in the house were always for me, and I never had to share with anyone.
One time you took a present away from one of your cats, like, no, these are mine. My presents.
You know, that might sound insulting to some of you, but that is exactly how I sounded as a child.
It's true.
These are my presents, kitty, kitty.
So the other thing I will say is that in my house, Hanukkah presents were substantial.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And I think part of that was, I don't want to say competing with Christmas, but
it was the literal war on Christmas.
Giving like an equal footing for both holidays.
Yeah. Can we talk about Hanukkah stuff in media? Because I really do think the Rugrats stuff is like a genuine revelation and was so like valuable to me as an educational resource, as even though I have not watched it in quite some time. Also the OC Chrismica episodes.
Yes.
There's actually only like one actually good one. And one of them is a season in which they fall into an alternate reality because the OC gets fucking buck wild. It's only for one episode. It's not like what was that show with Joshua Jackson on it?
Dawson's Creek.
Yeah, you're in Dawson's Creek where they fall into alternate reality. Fringe. I mean, there's not a lot. I mean, no joke, like Adam Sandler 8 Crazy Nights is like probably not one that maybe you want to own. I have not seen 8 Crazy Nights. Let us know. There's probably a ton that we just don't
recognize. Yeah, I feel like there's something not I'm having, thinking of. About. I mean, you could Google it.
7 best Hanukkah TV episodes that'll make the perfect finale to this year's Festival of Lights. On Bustle.com. Saturday Night Live. Come on. Oh, that was the episode where Adam Sandler sings the Hanukkah song.
Yeah.
Rugrats, Hanukkah. Nailed it. The Nanny, the Hanukkah story.
Did not see that.
Even Stevens, Heck of a Hanukkah. I do remember that. Fuck yeah,
that
Even Stevens.
That was a little
Stevens.
After my time.
Friends, the one with the holiday armadillo.
Oh, yeah, Friends. That's a good one.
The OC, the best Chrismica ever. Yup.
Yes.
Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, My Mom, Greg's Mom, and Josh's Sweet Dance Moves.
Oh, I don't think we've seen that one.
Yes. There needs to be more. There's 7. Now let's search the best Christmas episode.
The top 399 Christmas TV shows.
I mean, 100 best Christmas TV episodes of all time. Hanukkah movies?
So this is what I was telling you about, though. This is the problem with trying to put Hanukkah up against Christmas.
Yeah, I know.
Like, the nature of Hanukkah is not...
They do not need to compete. I'm just trying to illustrate that there's not, like, a ton of...
Yeah.
A ton of, like, stuff out there, like, to learn about if you did not grow up in a Jewish household.
Well, and that's what's interesting. So when I was telling Griffin that I wanted to talk about Hanukkah this week... I felt this need to do all this research and provide a lot of education on the holiday. And we were talking about how typically when we talk about things we like, we don't feel the need to do that. You know, we'll give a little bit of history, but we won't spend a lot of time giving the background. But I just felt like there's probably a lot of listeners that aren't really familiar with
it. Yeah, for
sure. And I wanted to give a little bit of information as kind of a jumping off point.
And they might go looking for resources on, like, say, this E! News listicle that I'm looking at now, which lists Inglourious Basterds as a Hanukkah movie.
Okay.
Little Fockers. Little Fockers? Say that out loud.
No.
Say that movie title out loud.
So we've got It's a Wonderful Life, White Christmas, these real, like, warm classics that have just some beautiful elements and superior acting performances. And then what was that Hanukkah movie you just mentioned?
Little Fockers. Yeah. So hold on, I read it wrong. Little Fuckers. What if that's what it was called? An American Tale?
Oh, I mean, they're Jewish. They're Jewish mice.
I think that this E! News article is just like,
it's not
we
Hanukkah.
Need movies with any Jewish people in them. Yeah, I'm glad you brought Hanukkah to the table here. And I'm glad we got to go out there and light that first candle, huh? Open up that first package.
So I read online, so you're supposed to do it at sundown.
Late on that, but we had a podcast to record.
Yeah, and then the idea is that you light an actual candle. You're not supposed to do the electric menorah, but, you know, we work with what we have. And then
we don't have candles.
Yeah, and then the flame
and
is...
And we also apparently don't have a menorah. We have a Hanukkah.
And then the flame is supposed to burn for at least 30 minutes after sundown, which is about how long typically a Hanukkah candle will last.
Unless you have a piece of shit cat that wants to knock it over or burn itself to death.
Yeah, it's always a terrifying situation in our house.
Hey, how about some submissions from our listeners at home?
Yeah.
This is one from Emily who says, I think baby trucks are wonderful. Not trucks for babies, but semi-trucks without the trailers, so they just look like tiny baby trucks. Every time I see one driving, it makes me so happy to think of them growing up to become a full-grown truck.
I was going to say, is that a technical term, baby truck?
Almost certainly not, but it doesn't make it not great. Here's another Emily, a different Emily, who says, I know many people dread having to wrap presents, but it's one of my favorite parts of the holiday season. I love the whole process, finding beautifully patterned papers and coordinated bows, the sound of scissors gliding through a cut. Oh, God, that sound. The crispness of each crease around the edges and the joy of seeing a perfectly wrapped gift waiting to be opened.
I love a good crispy present.
There's nothing more cheerful than a pile of presents. Nicely wrapped presents and that sound of it. I mainly included this because the sound of those scissors running through paper is like the shit.
No, that's wonderful.
I think that might be ASMR for me. I think that might be the first one.
Oh, I bet there's YouTube videos, Griffin.
Yeah, definitely. Here's one more, and it's from Whitney, who says, something I think is wonderful is the episodes of Survivor where the loved ones visit. It's always a joyful and poignant moment when Jeff Probst brings them out and lets each contestant and have a moment with their loved one. After hugs and tears, Jeff then asks them to share about the emotions that they are feeling or love for each other, and their responses are always beautiful. Regardless of whether a contestant is hated or seen as a villain, any dislike or gameplay is stripped away in that moment. You see them for their real human self. You see how their loved ones see them. There's just so much joy and love and vulnerability in those moments, and it's not only a truly wonderful thing, it also never fails to make me cry. The happy kind.
Oh my gosh, I love those episodes. They're like so exploitative, and I know they're coming, and I know exactly what they're trying to do to me, and it still works.
Spouses being reunited.
Yes.
That's fine.
Usually like the tough guys that are kind of jerks, like when their family member comes out and they fall apart. It's the best.
It's the parents. Like when the parents roll up, that fucks me up, dude.
Yeah.
Fucks me clean up. But it is also it's beautiful and nice.
It's very nice.
I think that's it. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to Bowen and Augustus for the use of our theme song, Money Won't Pay. You can find a link to that in the episode description. You want to thank Maximum Fun?
Thank you to Max Fun. You can find lots of great podcasts on the Max Fun Network. Some that I have been listening to lately include Judge Sean Hodgman.
You are obsessed with Stop Podcasting Yourself.
Stop Podcasting Yourself.
You are listening
yourself.
To it pretty much constantly.
I'm a huge fan of that. Jordan Jesse Go is a good one. I listened to One Bad Mother. Gosh, just a whole lot of them. But you can find McElroy programming on McElroyShows.com. A lot of those shows are on the Max Fun Network, but, you can find a lot of other stuff there.
Yeah. I want to think of like,
Till Death Do Us Blart.
Till Death Do Us Blart, Rachel's most favorite podcast. I want to thank everybody who said, hey, at PodCon, we got a bunch of people saying that they loved Wonderful and that Aww. They were very supportive of the show. Rachel was unfortunately not there at PodCon. But
oh, I do want to say people have asked if we are ever going to do a live show, and that is very much a plan for us one day.
Yeah, I think we definitely want to do it. We had considered doing it during the Chicago tours, but Henry goes to sleep at like 6 o'clock, which makes it very difficult.
Yeah, if you all ever start doing matinee shows.
Yeah, let's do a Wonderful matinee. Fuck it. I think that's it for this one. So I always get so low when it's time to part, you know?
Mm-hmm, I know.
I've written a whole song about it.
Oh, here we go.
Bye.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.
How do you say cheese in Spanish?
What show should I have on my DVR?
What are the best songs of the year?
Is VR cool?
What's your jam?
Which one of you is the Renata of the panel?
For answers to these questions and so much more, come on over to Pop Rocket, a pop culture roundtable discussion that always has a fun, diverse panel talking about the stuff we love. Catch us every Wednesday on MaximumFun.org or wherever you decide to get your podcasts. I'm not going to judge.